is Marketing Over Coffee with Christopher Penn and John Wall.
Good morning. Welcome to Marketing Over Coffee. I'm John Wall. Today we have Allison Griffin. She's head of marketing at State Farm. She's going to talk to us about everything she's got going on over there. Allison, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. What a treat this morning.
All right. So before we jump into State Farm, I mean, you know, hugely established brand, so many things going on. You have a fantastic history as far as having come up through both HP and Intel.
Yes.
So, you know, kind of tell us about the path to State Farm. What were you doing in the tech world? And tell us more about that.
I was born and raised in Silicon Valley. My mom worked for HP. That is not why I got there, but I grew up in that mindset, in that tech spirit, especially I'm in my 50s. So in the 70s and 80s, growing up kind of in that spirit was really cool and part of my DNA. So I started my career in public relations and was on the HP account at an agency. And then they hired me. So I was internal to HP for almost 17 years and then went over to our partner Intel and never thought I would leave the Bay Area, born and raised there. My husband's family is there. My family is there, like all friends, everything, support system, whatever. Never thought that leaving tech was a possibility for me. And that pivot out of tech and being open to this new world when I was getting recruited at State Farm was something I recognized when it happened, because it happened to me earlier in my life. And what I mean by that is I really started my what thought would be my career in pharmacy. So when I was really young, wanted to be a pharmacist. I don't know where that got planted, not exactly sure, but worked at a pharmacy since I was 15 and a half, went to pharmacy school. And I remember I was licensed to fill prescriptions and I was standing before my degree, right? So I was still in the middle of getting a doctor of pharmacy license and degree. And I'm counting pills, you know, 5, 10, 15. And I just said, this is not for me. No disrespect to the profession or to anyone who does it, but I had been doing it since I was 15. I was in my early 20s. And I just thought counting is not where I want to go. So that pivot and that safety net of what I saw happen after is something that when State Farm called, I was open to the possibility that, you know what? I never thought I'd leave tech or Silicon Valley, but State Farm's a huge brand. What do they have going on? Let's find out.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, and good for you. Many people go 10, 20, 30 years before they realize that they've made a mistake on that thing. So what made you jump from pharmacy over to PR? Did you do PR as undergrad and what happened?
Yeah. So I was leaving University of the Pacific in Stockton, California. It was one of two universities in the entire state that had a doctor of pharmacy program. So I was there and I left and I was like, I don't know what I want to do. So I went to San Jose State because it was right near where I grew up. And I'm like, going to take one of everything. So I took a finance class. I took a drugs and the law class. I thought, well, maybe something with drugs, medication, that kind of thing, since I know it. And then I walked into an advertising class. And I am not exaggerating when I say it felt like the clouds parted and rays of sunshine were dripping on me. And I'm like, these are my people. This is the topic. Influence and culture and shaping perceptions. And I just had never paid attention. I was in chemistry, biology, math, just so much of my early college career that it just was like this aha moment. So I double, tripled down in that discipline, in the marketing world, had a concentration in public relations, got a job at an agency, and so it goes, right? It just snowballed from there.
Right. Okay. So you jump over to PR firm then. So that's classic work over there.
Yeah.
As you jumped to HP, were you doing PR stuff or at what point did you transition to start doing programs is where I want to go.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I gotcha. So I started in on the agency side and doing public relations in part many clients, but one of them was Hewlett Packard. And then they decided to just hire me internally as the PR manager. So I started my corporate side experience versus agency doing what I had been doing for several years for Hewlett Packard anyway, easy transition. I knew the team, I understood all of that. And in that role at HP, I had this, and over the almost 17 years internally there, I had such an amazing opportunity to add more functions. So PR, executive comms, internal comms, you know, messaging, strategy, right? It just kept building. And then I also had the opportunity open to me different parts of Hewlett-Packard's business. The PC business, which is commodity, quick buy, retail mostly, but enterprise sales as well. And then the printer business, and then the server storage and networking business, you know, totally different business model, long. So learning account-based marketing and white papers and gated content and right things that data center buyers were wanting. So Hewlett-Packard just started, you know, job by job, position by position, adding to the marketing acumen. And then I had the opportunity to live in Geneva, Switzerland, moved my entire family and had a region job. And so learned that as well. And I'm telling you, I mean, so grateful to HP for building my acumen in the safe space of one company, one set of, you know, understanding and values and things like that. And the ease of just expanding my career slowly over time, that by the time Intel was looking, they knew me because they were a really big partner. HP did so much of its marketing with Microsoft and Intel, especially in the 90s when I was, you know, kind of coming up in the early 2000s, the OEMs like original equipment manufacturers as HP was, couldn't really afford all the marketing with their own dollars. So they partnered with people like Microsoft and Intel to bolster the ability to get the message out in the market. And so in dealing with Intel, they were looking to have somebody who could anchor to Experience Amazing, which was their consumer PC Intel Inside kind of known marketing, and add to it the understanding of data and enterprise, because that's where Intel needed to grow. Not their PC business, they had 90% market share at the time. Like, wow. And they needed to grow with artificial intelligence, autonomous driving, commercial drones, things that were more B2B. And I had done both at HP and with Intel. So they were like, hey, maybe you can come here and help us grow the brand and include consumer idealism with more practical B2B marketing and marry the two. And then weirdly, that's what attracted State Farm.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so then the next step is, and I can totally see that you have such a broad range of experience. You're kind of doing full stack marketing by that point. And so
correct.
State Farm was just like, hey, we want to go, you know, kind of jump to that next level. And we've heard you're doing stuff.
I have to hand it to them. So I've been internal to State Farm for a little over 4.5 years. So let's say 5 years ago, right? Like as State Farm was looking to continue to grow, it refreshed its brand already, and it knew it wanted to double, triple, quadruple down on the asset Jake from State Farm. But its perspective in marketing up until that time, let's say 5 years ago and longer ago, they were mostly a television, mostly live sports kind of advertiser, commercial, linear television. And the tech world and the B2B world was, of course, mastered long ago. It wasn't new to us in the tech world, this lead nurturing, digital marketing, how to engage people online, follow, you know, cookies were, you know, I remember how many years did they say cookies are going to go away? And I don't know. What year are we in? 2025. Anyway, and so following people around the web in that very safe privacy way, but just understanding digital behaviors and being able to use data to target right message, right person, right time. And State Farm was smart enough to understand that if it didn't kind of modernize and get into that, that it could lose its, you know, leadership position. And so at first they called and I'm like, are you... Did you call the right person? Like, not an insurance person at all. But there were so many synergies. And this is the thing. This is, I think, what married the two of us together, me from tech and State Farm, that for almost 30 years, I had been working with, let's say, Intel and HP. Of course, there were other brands early in my career, but for the bulk, always Silicon Valley. But Intel and HP, and State Farm were actually very similar from a marketing perspective. All three were very established, old in a good way, tenured brands. State Farm was the oldest. We're almost 104 years old now. But at the time, you know, like 75-ish for HP and 50-ish for Intel. So in the markets where they do business, they do not have an awareness problem, none of the three brands. But every one of those brands has a relevance problem. Printing is how mostly Hewlett-Packard made its money, ink and toner. And I don't know, when was the last time people printed stuff, right? Especially as digital got more and more. So relevance really mattered to them. And the same with Intel. They're a thing and a thing and a thing and a thing, right? They're a silicon chip inside somebody else's product. And relevance really mattered to them. And insurance. Let's be honest. Nobody cares about insurance. And it is a huge concern for the industry. And that's why it's so prolific in its advertising. It's marketing-led type of category. And the things we were thinking about and doing for these old established tenured brands in tech, using data and technology, using a new kind of modernizing marketing, and marrying that with big budgets and consumer ideals and getting out there, I think there was just something that State Farm saw could help it in its transition, not away completely from linear television, but toward this digital ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. You know, they wanted to jump to the next level and go to Silicon Valley. Tech has been pushing the frontier there. So bring you in. So you mentioned Jake, but we have to at least touch on that. So Jake already existed. You said they were like double down, triple down, quadruple down, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, tell us about Jake. Give us the inside story.
There's a fun story about Jake. So the real story that not very many people know, and I'll share it with you and your listeners here, is that Jake from State Farm originated, gosh, now maybe 15 years ago. And there you might remember it. And of course, you can go to YouTube and find the old classic commercial. It started with the scenario was a late night couple and the wife comes downstairs, her husband's on the phone and she, you know, wonders, who are you talking to? And he says, it's Jake from State Farm. And she famously says, oh yeah, Jake from State Farm, what are you wearing? And he says, khakis. So that was many years ago, 10, 15 years ago. Long before me. And they ran that spot, State Farm ran it for a really long time. So they understood, the brand understood that it had equity in the one word Jake from State Farm already. And when they did a brand refresh right before I got there, basically they aligned with these new assets, kind of updated the logo, things like that, and knew it wanted to double down. But then I was here to, you know, then take it forward. And so Jake was a real State Farm employee, that original commercial. And the funny story is about it. We used to have real agents and some actual employees in our ads. And so woman, she's still on my team today, said, hey, we're looking for someone in the call center. Anybody know anyone who's in the call center today? And a guy on our team, another, said, my roommate's working, Jake. He's working today. So they walked over to Jake. His real name was Jake, and he was really wearing khakis. And that's how that original concept started. So it's funny story. He still works at State Farm today. He left for a little while. I think the residuals on that commercial were pretty good. And he was able to kind of take a sidestep for a minute, but he came back and we love him dearly. His khakis are hanging in a bar in our home. You know, Bloomington Normal is the two towns that our headquarters are in. And the original khakis are there on the wall in tribute to Jake, who is a resident of our town.
That's amazing that he was an employee. I was not expecting to hear that whatsoever. And then it's also interesting to hear you say the residuals came rolling in because, for those types of roles, like it's just insane when they run for years, it's got to be huge.
Years. Exactly. Exactly. So he is very supportive. And the new Jake from State Farm is really who you're asking about, I think. But it was really fun. We launched him with a bang in Super Bowl. And it was a pretty, it got a lot of traction. It was Drake, the singer rapper Drake. We did a Super Bowl spot, the very first one that State Farm did. And he basically was playing the understudy of Jake from State Farm in a commercial. and bites an apple and says, you know, I'm Drake from State Farm, and Jake gets flustered. And it was a pretty funny spot. And that kind of launched the actor that we hired to portray Drake. And really the whole point of Jake from State Farm, he's not a cartoon. He's not a caricature. He's not the butt of the joke. He is the personification of what it means to be a good neighbor. And that's all he does. It's his role in our mix of assets. In fact, we have 7 brand assets that we dial up and dial down in real life and digitally, depending on what the activation or marketing sort of deliverable is. And Jake from State Farm plays a very significant role in being that human and real touch in communities across the United States. So he can move in the world and credibly show up at a football game with Mama Kelsey 1 week to the day after Taylor Swift came on the scene. He can realistically show up to support Caitlin Clark as she gets the number one draft pick for the WNBA, things like that, that we've mixed him as a TikTok personality and influencer, as moving and in the real world, and as just personifying this good neighbor spirit across the country.
Yeah, that's it's obvious because you kind of hit that nerve of, yeah, a good neighbor, an honest person. You know, a lot of the competition has things that are wacky or unreal, and you guys have just kind of nailed right in the center of that, you know, human touch. And then, yeah, unfortunately, the general public, like you said, doesn't think about insurance. But anybody that's really dealt with insurance knows that it is all about that human contact, because, you know, that's this right. is when things go south. You know, you're not looking for a joke. You're looking for a good neighbor.
That's right. When you need it, it matters.
Yeah. You're head on and in. Okay. Tell us a little bit about your team and, you know, how you work, kind of what's the structure and what are you responsible for? Give us a look at, you know, a week in the office with you.
That's what's really fun and different about the almost 30 years that I spent in tech. So in tech, there's big, global, massive companies and lots of business units and regions, different countries, and team upon team upon team upon matrix, right? And it's fine. I grew up that way in my career. I didn't know any different. At State Farm, it's one team. We operate in one country of the United States. That's it. And everything is in my domain. So it's fun. I mean, everything from the creative, amazing ideas around Super Bowl. Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm, and having Jason Bateman as the opposite of Batman, you know, those kinds of fun, creative, big productions, all of that, to the measurement, to the analytics, to the MarTech stack, to the MarSci test, A-B testing that we do, to the strategy, of course, the budgets, the agents. We have 19,000 agents across the United States. And in fact, there are more storefronts in the United States of State Farm than McDonald's and Starbucks. I mean, just to get your head around, it's nearly 100,000 people, the 19,000 agents plus their team members, we call them, who are independent contractors across the US that are in these communities. And so managing, helping them with their marketing and the programs and the support system around them. So my responsibility is everything marketing, earned media, social, it's all the elements of marketing. And so for me, that was part of what attracted me to the position and got me out of the Bay Area into Central Illinois. It got me out of a big global public company, which is really all I knew, to this very focused, mission-driven mutual company. So unlike our two big competitors who are shareholder-driven, we are not public company. We are mutual. Our policyholders own the business. And so our timelines are different than quarter to quarter to quarter, trying to make the numbers, trying to make investors happy, making layoff decisions or hiring decisions or whatever. It's so different. And again, comparing that to what I was used to in the public company world of tech is just a very different, intriguing opportunity to own it all, no matrix structure, and to have this longer view.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, not having to answer to the street. We just see that just causes so much trouble along the way. regular in the show, we talk a lot about the gaming industry just because, you know, it's now bigger than movies. It's completely taken over the world, basically. And you guys have been doing a bunch of stuff, you know, in a bunch of different fronts in that. So what's going on there and what's got you excited?
So our marketing focuses on people's passions. So you know us, if you watch sports, we're always in sports. Can't get away from any of the insurance carriers if you're watching live sports, actually. But also music and also gaming. So you bring up gaming. I come from the tech industry, as we've said. I've been doing gaming for a really long time. We launched the Omen PC at HP, which they still have. Of course, Intel, huge in gaming. The processing power and the speed of the chip of Intel is part of what makes gaming rigs so effective for streaming and the sound and the visual quality, all that kind of stuff, right? So Hewlett Packard and Intel cemented and started my understanding and marketing of the gaming world. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger as time has gone on. So when I got to State Farm, State Farm had always had a play in gaming, but more, I'll kind of put my hand here in the lower third of the screen, like a logo sponsorship in the bottom left corner, you know, that kind of thing. And they had sponsored a gamer in the past, Dr. Lupo. So there was definitely recognition. But when I got here, I wanted to really push. And one of the very first things we did was kind of really open up gaming as a passion point and thinking about it in the same way that the teams in State Farm were thinking about live sports. And it was new. And so we created this intellectual property, and we now have IP around gamerhood. It started, we've already done 4 seasons. And it started out with using gamers and content creators and putting them in a neighborhood. That's why it was called Gamerhood. And the story was a 5-week episodic over a 5-week period in the summer of competitions, but they were centered around insurable moments. So I knew that it was fun to watch really good gamers have to cope with outside distractions and see if you could kind of mess them up and who could cope with it the best. Cause we know they're really good gamers. They're going to sit there and know, you know, where to go and how to do the best path to beat the boss. I don't know. I'm not a big gamer, but I know enough to be dangerous. And so we knew that they could play the games and one would be better than the other in that day. But what if a tornado hit the house or pipes burst or a burglar came in the night before and took their controllers or other elements of the game, and then they had to game and cope with these insurable moment disasters? And it was very light touch. It was very fun and cheeky just to have them cope with the gaming, but as to able to get some like light edutainment messaging around insurable moments in there. And of course, using Jake from State Farm, who's a beloved personality, to be there to help with boosts. And you could, if you won, you could get something that would help you in the next challenge, things like that, being a good neighbor. So that's how it started. We've evolved it. It's still the basic same structure, but we went from sort of this neighborhood to this futuristic neo city. And bigger gamers, bigger names, and really cementing this gamerhood challenge that we do every summer. The big thing that happened with this last season is we extended the gamerhood series, which was played on Twitch and YouTube up in his history. And now it's also streaming on Amazon Prime and opening up the world of gamers and their personalities and their celebrity to a broader audience. And we're really excited about that.
One thing that you've talked about is the marketer's role in culture, you know, not just advertising. Tell us more about that. What does that mean?
Culture matters in a category for us, like insurance, because insurance doesn't matter to people. Like we've established, nobody cares about insurance and they're not seeking out, I wonder what my insurance carrier is doing today, right? It's just not going to happen. And you said earlier that insurance matters when it matters, but mostly, thankfully, most customers don't ever have to deal with a problem. They live their lives. They have nothing, no catastrophes, weather incidents or things happen to them, and it's fine. But when you need it, it really matters who is your partner in helping recover from the unexpected and realizing your dreams. And we take that very seriously. So for us, it's a matter of making sure that we can break through to get that message. And culture, we know, is a way to do it. So aligning with trends are important. We've done things like when NFTs were just coming on the scene. When was that? 2021. They were brand new and they were going to be the big thing. We did a nationwide game where you could play a game and earn NFTs. It went wild because nobody, and we were giving them away for free, by the way. Like, you didn't have to, you know, if you sold them and made money off them, that was fine on you, right? So it was this new technology and we weren't taking a cut of anything. And so people clamored. And for us, it's like there was talk value because we were doing it, because no one was doing it, not even tech companies yet, really. And we were able to get opt-ins because people were willing to give us their information in order to win these NFTs. And so the point there is that was a cultural moment at the time. Metaverse was a cultural moment at the time. We like to say that waves in marketing come and go and the waves crash, and that's okay. But riding the wave and recognizing when to jump on one and when not to is I think why culture and relevance is so important for marketers to keep a pulse on.
Oh, that's great. All right. Well, we're going to talk about the next wave. But before we do, we just have to take a second. We want to thank Trust Insights for their support of Marketing Over Coffee. Check out their Generative AI for Marketers case studies and other courses over in their school over at the Trust Insights Academy. Link to that in the show notes. And we thank them for their support of the show. Okay. So yeah, what's next on your radar? Like, what are you looking at now, things developing or in process that you might want to take advantage of over the next year or 2 years?
Culture still matters. And we like to say, so my strategy with culture and kind of what's next, even though nobody knows yet necessarily, is because we're a mutual company and we're not quarter to quarter to quarter scrambling for shareholder value, we're here for our policyholders and to make sure that we have time to tell our stories. I say, create the conditions over time that allow you to capture lightning in a bottle if it presents itself. And for us, we've done that many times, and culture is the reason to do it. So you never know when putting Jake in the real world authentically allowed us to capture that Taylor Swift moment when she first came on the scene with Travis Kelce at a Chiefs game. I mean, that blew everybody's mind. Now it's like, yeah. And maybe even people are irritated by it at this point. I don't know. No judgment there. But the point was, because Jake had already been, like I said, conditions over time, already been living in the real world, already had a TikTok account, already was considered an influencer, and moved in real places credibly and welcomed in those places by fans, that we were able to pick up the phone when Ryan Reynolds' Maximum Effort called and said, hey, we have an idea. Within a week, and we're a risk company, we don't move quickly on things in our category. When you're in the risk business, you are very methodical, process oriented about how you roll out, you know, the latest idea. But this one was so great that he, Jake from State Farm, could sit in the stands with Mama Kelce at an Eagles game to support not Travis, but his brother, Jason, who also needs a friend in the stand. And then to spoof, there were a bunch of things that kind of spoofed and made nods to what Taylor did the week before. And because we jumped on it so fast, we were able to just explode and part of a cultural moment that was, I knew it would be big and talked about. It was a great idea. And I really appreciate Maximum Effort to bringing it to us. But it well exceeded any kind of marketing, media buy, or stunt that you could have done because of its cultural relevance and because of the talk value around it. And had we not had set up those conditions, we wouldn't have been able to take advantage of some idea like that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That kind of newsjacking to be able to jump in and take advantage of what's already out there. I like that. That's excellent.
It's cool too, because Jake is, you know, like we don't pay for these things. Jake's on Saturday Night Live many times. Jake's been an answer, or State Farm has been an answer on Jeopardy many times. Spike Lee's movie that just came out several months ago recently, of the however long the movie is, a 2-hour movie, and they get the best scenes to drive interest and attention for a trailer, right? So we had no idea that we were in the movie, let alone going to be in the trailer. And all of a sudden the trailer comes out, and much to our surprise, it references, oh, this is insurance. This is Jake from State Farm. And it was like, wow. I mean, that's why you do culture. That's why we create the conditions over time. That is that you can't pay for that. And our budgets are much smaller than our competitors. In fact, depending on the day, these days we're probably fourth or fifth, actually. And a lot, when I tell people that, they're very surprised. They're like, what are you talking about? I see State Farm all the time. I can't imagine. And by the way, it's a big delta between the biggest ad spender and us. Very big. Billions with a B, plural, more that they spend than we do. So we have to be really smart and strategic about how we put those seven assets, our jingle, meaning the actual musical notes, the phrase like a good neighbor, Jake from State Farm, the khakis, the logo, the lockup with the words, and the color red, right? Those are our seven different assets. And we have to be really smart about how we roll them in and out, because we don't have the budgets. We aren't spending money the way our competitors do in this really crowded category. So one of the ways to break through is to be in culture and to be relevant and move in a way that allows, you know, you sort of indicated these press attention, earned, owned, right? These other talk value on, you know, online and in conversations to extend how much marketing you're getting, how much money you're spending. And like, even with Batman, we took such care with the characters. There were a bunch of villains in that. And one of the proudest things for me was when that trailer came out and the DC universe saw the Joker, all of them, but the Joker in particular, the fans, the true fans of Batman, were just in love with what we did with the Batmobile, with Batman's costume, his outfit, and with how we portrayed the villains, that added talk value that you can't pay for.
That sounds good. Yeah, we'll have links to that Batman spot. I want to put that in there so people can check that out. So as we wind down, tell us, what else have you got going on? Have you read anything, watched, seen anything that you can recommend to our audience over the past couple months?
Yeah, everyone's talking about AI, of course, and we're, you know, thinking about it. It's funny to me coming from tech, because we talked about AI decades ago. So it's not new, but there's this really cool book called Co-Intelligence, Living and Working with AI. It's by an author, Ethan Mollick. And I read it recently and it was really interesting. And especially for people who are unsure and wondering, like, are robots going to rise up and kill us in our sleep? I remember coping with that question back in the Intel days. And no, I don't think they will, but spoiler alert. But this book talks about kind of this co-intelligence and thinking differently about AI as a tool and a co-creator, not being intimidated or frustrated by it, but harnessing and challenging us to understand the enormous power that it has for us as a tool. And, you know, we talked before about waves come and they crash and new technologies come. And I don't see this as like AI fatigue. You know, my hot take is, this is just another one of the tools that are coming. And I don't mean crash like it'll go away. That's not what I mean. But that we'll learn, we'll cope with. And then by the time, you know, we'll be able to deal with it. And then the next thing is going to come. And this will feel like, oh, yeah, we got that. And so I loved the take of Ethan Mollick's view of just sort of coexisting with AI. And I also like the take of all of us as marketers harnessing its power, playing around with it. Don't overuse it if it's not right for your brand, but definitely think about it, bring it in. And all of us as people in the world, oh my gosh, play with the free tools out there, do prompts, practice. What I did it for my family took a vacation to Iceland this last summer. And I'm like, all right, here are the ages. I have two adult boys, you know, here are four adults, these ages, here's the kind of things we like to do. What's a good three days in Iceland? What do you recommend as the must do? And it did it. And I refined, oh no, well, we don't, you know, like this kind of thing. What else? And the whole reason I did it was not just to get ideas for a trip that we were taking. It was to practice, if I prompt this way, what will it give me? If I add in an adjustment, how does that work? And all of us need to start using it for any manner of personal use so that we can understand its power and coexist with it.
Yeah, there's so much going on in that. We've got kind of the hype cycle running on generative, you know, this idea of, oh, it's going to write blog posts, it's going to make videos. But that use case that you talked about as far as giving it data and having it summarize or go out and append, sure. That's where there's huge value and a bunch of stuff to go on. All right. Yeah. The folks at Trust Insights will be thrilled that you've given a plug for prompt generation. And that's right.
I mean, it's important. They're right.
It's right on the mark. Okay. We'll have links to everything in the show notes. You can sign up for the newsletter or on the text line at 617-812-5494. But that's going to do it for us for today. Allison, thanks for joining us.
John, thank you so much for having me. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about marketing. It's my favorite topic.
All right, that'll do it for this week. So until next week, enjoy the coffee.
You've been listening to Marketing Over Coffee. Christopher Penn blogs at ChristopherSPenn.com. Read more from John J. Wall at JW5150.com. The Marketing Over Coffee theme song is called Mellow G by Funk Masters. And you can find it at Musical.ly from Mevio, or follow the link in our show notes.